Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
And our guest?
Our guest, Ruth Hollingshead.
Very good. Ah, we forgot someone. Mocha. Ruth's dog, yes. Assistant dog. So it's brilliant. She is absolutely gorgeous. She's only about 2 years old, so we'll talk about that a little bit later, I should say. Right, now we have a guest in. Now, Ruth, you're going to tell us about your old guide dog, I believe.
I can tell you about my old guide dog, yes.
Just sit a bit forward a bit more, please.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I mean, I was matched with my first guide dog in 2017. Her name was Flora, and she's a golden retriever lab cross. She was, say, my first guide dog. I made the decision to apply because my children were getting that bit older, and I could sort of see them going off to university and me becoming more and more isolated, I suppose, and going out less and less. So yes, I had Flora, and things were amazing. I didn't really realise what I'd been missing out on until I got my guide dog and suddenly could go out and do all the things I wanted to do independently. So, you know, going to cafes, getting the bus, all these sorts of things, which is quite doable with a long cane. But it is for me, it's much more sort of tiring, I suppose, using a long cane. You have to be much more aware. You spend your time in sort of hypervigilant mode because you're worrying about not only where you are and where you're going, but navigating people. That's one of the most difficult things to do as a blind person. Non-static objects, people suddenly deciding to turn around in the middle of the pavement, or people who are looking at their phone screens and not looking where they're going, or pushchairs, prams, all the things, you know. So when you have got a long cane, it is much more difficult to navigate moving targets, if you like, and that's where the guide dogs come in, because they will weave in and out. So suddenly walking down the high street, you sort of, as I say, weave in and out of people straight down. It's absolutely amazing. And Flora and I worked really well together for 3 years. And then I noticed that she was starting to slow down a little bit, and not working quite as quickly. Her speed was dropping a little. And after a long, really long free run, I noticed that she was limping, and it was a vet visit. And I was really surprised that she was diagnosed with arthritis and hip dysplasia. And I rang guide dogs, and they said, "That's it. Hang your harness up. She will be medically retired." Although she is now on monthly painkilling injections, and she's absolutely pain-free and absolutely fine, it's not ethical to work a dog. Sorry, I'm being pulled across the studio on a wheelie chair by my new dog now. It's not ethical to work a dog, I don't think, who is potentially, you know, in discomfort. So this decision for me to retire was easy on those grounds, but very hard for me. You know, you have to do what's right for the dog. And I was very, very fortunate, because I've got two grown-up children at home and family close by. I was able to keep Flora. So she has become a well-loved family pet.
Oh, how fabulous.
Yes, it's lovely. But it did mean that I had to go back to, as I've said before, to Michael Kane, my horrible long cane, and rely on him for nearly 18 months. So
that must have been very difficult to do.
It is very difficult. When you first get your first guide dog, you suddenly realise that the whole world wants to talk to you. And it's really overwhelming to start with. Everybody will come up and speak to you, which is lovely, and you really get used to it. The moment you have your long cane, I call it my invisibility cane, because nobody will speak to you when you've got a long cane. I don't know what it is, whether it's, I don't know whether people just don't quite know how to approach you, or whether they're just nervous about it. But if I go out with my long cane, nobody will speak to me with it.
It's a shame.
It is really surprising, you know, really, it is really surprising. So you had to get used to that, suddenly, you know, being quite, again, feeling quite isolated. And I say it was quite a long process to get back onto the waiting list. Flora retired in 2021, so we're just coming out of COVID. And so, yes, I was sort of stuck. It was 10 months to get back onto the list, the waiting list. And I was incredibly fortunate that I was matched very quickly. So I got a phone call in September, and it was literally, "We think we found a match for you." I was like, "Right." And they said, "What are you doing tomorrow?" And I said, "Well, nothing. Can we do a matching visit?" I said, "Yes." So they literally bought Mocha over, and she spent the night with me without Flora there. Flora went to my mum's house, and it all went very well. And then I had a phone call Friday afternoon saying, "Can you start training on Monday?" Wow. So it was, they can be that quick. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose that when you've got a cane, you haven't got an attraction there, whereas a dog will attract people because they're there, aren't they? And you think, oh, that's a guide dog, lovely. I know they're working dogs as well, but they do attract people, and they are gorgeous animals. They are, and they're so so well behaved as well, better than children, I think. I suppose she has her days as well, but
oh,
yes,
she does.
And I suppose that when you have a guide dog, you feel completely in the dog's charge, don't you? And you just let the dog move you wherever you go, and you feel absolutely safe, don't you?
You do. I mean, there's a huge element of trust there.
Absolutely,
I mean, it was much easier this time round with Mocha, just to let yourself go and you know, and I have to say, her work is excellent. Don't tell Flora that she's slightly better than her.
Oh, dear. Let's hope she's not listening.
She won't be listening. But I think a lot of it is guide dogs have changed the way they do their training now. They've gone completely over to a positive reinforcement way of doing training, and it's all rewards-based, and it works really well, particularly with the Labradors, who are, you know, quite greedy dogs, to be fair. So they will do anything for a biscuit, for a piece of kibble. And, I mean, what you do is you weigh their food allowance out in the morning, and they have a couple of handfuls for their breakfast, and the rest of it goes into a treat pouch, which I'm wearing now. And as they work during the day, they sort of get their wages, if you like.
Yeah.
And because you're continuously reinforcing their good behaviour, the curb work I've got out of her is absolutely excellent. She's a really, really good worker. And very quickly, I realised that within the first sort of 2 or 3 days, I thought, I've got a good dog here. I will say that her behaviour in the house is not quite as good as Flora's. But a lot of that, I think, is because I've gone back to having a young dog. I've got used to a sort of mellow 8-year-old dog, and suddenly I've got a bombshell running around the house, hiding slippers and taking bras in the garden and being a pest, really.
Just like normal dogs.
So how is Flora different from Mocha?
Flora is so placid. She's a very placid, very laid back, very gentle dog. Again, so if I give Flora a sort of treat, she'll sort of suck it off your fingers. And I got a nasty surprise the first time I held one out for Mocha, because I was almost up to my elbow in her mouth before I managed to pull my hand back. And they are very different like that. It's lovely watching them play sort of together, playing tug of war and things like that, because Flora does let Mocha win a lot of the time. And Mocha will lay with her legs spread out like a starfish and let Flora pull around the kitchen floor, sort of thing. And they play really nicely together. Because obviously, again, that is a big issue when you're being matched with your dog. If you have a pet dog or anything, you know, even small children or other pets within the house, is the new dog going to work out with the sort of family setup as it is? There's a lot that goes into this sort of the matrix of the matching process, which is why it can take so long, and why people who have more complex needs can wait even longer.
Indeed. So would you say that having Mocha as a pup, well, I know she's not a pup, but she's a young dog, is a lot different to the way that Flora was trained in terms of how you deal with her?
In a way, yes. I mean, I was very lucky in that the guide dog mobility instructor that I had with Flora was very much, he almost used the positive reinforcement methods anyway. Mm. That's what he had sort of 40 years experience of working with dogs, and he was very much, you know, it's all about the praise, you know, don't ever overcorrect your dog, and that's what's been sort of completely sort of almost got rid of within the guide dog training. Mm. Now is that whole ignore the bad behaviour, praise the positive behaviour, which seems to really work, particularly with Mocha. And so there was none of the sort of, you know, telling them off or anything like that, which, to be fair, I didn't do with Flora. Mm. Because I wasn't told to, but that was the old methods. There was a lot more correction. And there was a lot more coaxing with Flora. She was quite a nervous dog when I first got her. She was quite anxious. It took us 12 weeks to do my training, and she was, you know, there was a few times when we didn't actually think she would make the grade. She was quite an anxious dog, whereas Mocha's bulletproof, and she's fearless, and she's literally, off she goes. So, yes, just, Mocha was Flora was my first dog, so I'd never had anything to compare it to, and I just thought... Mm. Yeah, so the difference between the two is remarkable.
Now, Andy, you've got a couple of questions, haven't you?
I have, yeah. Danny has as well.
Oh, sorry.
Well, Andy's left the studio. Danny's here.
Danny's come back.
I don't know when Andy's going to come back. We'll tell him he's going to be on in a minute. Just to listen to you tell us about your dog during the break. There's a couple of things that sort of jumped out of it. I love fitness, nutrition, and I'm a process orientated individual. I love systems and that sort of thing. What I didn't understand is the fact that, or realise, is that your first dog, you had to be kind of trained how to use the dog, not just the dog to help you. And I think obviously you've got this second dog now, so it's you understand how it functions, you know, as a help to you. Just talk us through what you had to kind of learn first.
Well, I mean, to start with, there's verbal commands. So there is left, right, there is forward, straight on, and find. She will find a bin, find a chair, find a door.
Yeah.
There's also visual actions that will go with that. It's almost like when you do the forward command, it's almost like you're bowling. So you'll bowl a ball,
yeah,
and then just put your pointing left and right, or you can tap your thigh for turning right. So obviously you have to learn all these sort of commands.
Yeah.
And also you have the guide dog mobility instructor will do your routes with you,
yeah,
because where I, for example, used to cross the road wasn't suitable for where the dog needs to cross the road. So although you know your routes, it's just fine tuning them.
Right.
And it's just tweaking those little bits that you need to...
So it fits the dog's sort of capability.
Absolutely. And also when you first get your dog, they are trained to stop at both curbs. So they'll stop at the down curb, so when you start to cross the road, but they're also trained to stop at the up curb on the other side.
Right.
And that's something you can continue. You can also, that when they first come, they will sit.
Right.
But you can sort of get rid of that if that's what you want. So, for example, Mocha will stop at the curb when we start to cross the road, but she won't stop on the other side because that's not what I want.
Right.
I want to continue walking.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, there's those little bits you need to fine tune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing that just kind of made me smile is the fact that the dog gets weighed on a regular basis to make sure you're not giving them too much treats outside what's the sort of the guidelines for reward.
Yeah, they do have a working weight. I mean, when you get them, they come on with their little logbook, and that is their working weight, and you are expected to keep them within that working weight. It's purely for their own health.
Their own
really.
Health, yeah, just like
I mean,
we
Labradors,
do, yeah,
as we all know, are prone to but you can see some more rotund Labradors about, and they will eat because they're perpetually hungry.
Right.
They never feel full Labradors, so they will eat and eat. So her food every morning is weighed out for her,
right?
And that's her food allowance for the day, and a lot of that is sort of rewards for when we are training, when we're working.
Yeah, because that's basically what I do with my fitness regime. Is I weigh myself on a regular basis. I, you know, look after my nutrition and I know my calories and all those sort of things. So it's kind of me and Mocha kind of probably go through the same process. She's probably not so happy with it though, because it's enforced on her.
And it's a similar thing. I mean, you shouldn't ever sort of either extend or contract the girth on her harness.
Right.
And so probably similarly with your belt.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. The belt loop. Is a good gauge of where we are. Yeah. That's really interesting. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, Danny. I got your name right. I'm doing well now. It's only once.
Well, you're not. I'm going to go and get Andy in a minute. He's going to come back in a minute.
Okay. You're not getting any treats anyway, so don't look at our drink. That's for the dog only.
That's fine with me.
Well, thank you for that. So anything else? There's one question. How do you get on with cooking in the kitchen?
We had a brief discussion about this, didn't we, during the break? I mean, I learned to cook as a visually impaired person, so it's something that I've always done, you know, not being able to see. So I do have a tiny bit of residual sight. I've got about 5% functional vision. So my kitchen actually looks almost like an autopsy suite. It's bright white. You'll get a tan from the lights in there. It's absolutely sort of sparklingly white, but all my utensils are orange, and there's a lot of contrast in my kitchen. So for the things that I can put down, I can pick up again. I use something called bump-ons on my cooker, so they're little plastic stick-on dots that you can get to mark temperatures. And you know, it's just ways that I've learned. I use my air fryer a lot. I use my slow cooker a lot. Mm. So there's different ways of doing things, you know. And as I say, I'm the trustee at Sight for White, and I do the Living Well with Sight Loss courses. And it's much more difficult working with people who are at the beginning of their sight loss journey, having to relearn these skills. But there is help and support out there. But it's just sort of finding it and using it.
Any more, Kitty?
I was just going to say it's fabulous that you've come to see to us, come to see us today to have a chat about the difference between Mocha and how it was walking with Michael.
Michael Caine, yes.
Yes, Michael Caine, once you were dog-free for a short while. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us, Ruth.
No, it's my pleasure. And I say, hopefully just alleviates a bit of that sort of mystery about, you know, mystery around sort of blind people, that we're this sort of, I don't know. Yes, this sort of strange race of people that can't be approached. We're just normal, boring people who can't see. That's all we are, really.
Well, thank you so much.
I don't think the boring part, unless once they got to know you, they wouldn't be bored, that's for sure.
I'm sitting here in a pair of crocheted trousers, so not necessarily boring, no.
No, it certainly is not. But, well, thank you very much for coming in, Ruth. It's been an absolute pleasure for you to come in and see us.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. Marketing at vectisradio.fm.